Hello and welcome back to Studio 525 for Pleasure Beach's very own podcast where we're talking it live. A little bit of a different format today, but I'm joined by Andy Highgate, our Director of Operations, and Glenn Robertson, aka the Notable Stranger, who's going to be telling us a little bit about what goes into the sound and soundtracks for a lot of the rides and indeed the Hot Ice Show, which we'll be looking at now. I'm Stuart Cumming, Marketing Manager, and I'll give you a little bit of an insight into some of the marketing activities that we're doing for Evictus, as well as other glimpses into behind the scenes from all of us. So without any further ado, I think, Glenn, tonight we're all together because it's the closing night of Hot Ice. So it's great to have you here, and obviously you're a big, massive part of Hot Ice.
Thank you very much. It's exciting and a kind of mournful thing. It's the last night of the season for Hot Ice. But yeah, it's the first time we've seen it this year because I couldn't come to the opening night. So it's, again, exciting and mournful at the same time.
And I think for anybody who is watching who doesn't know who you are, they've probably heard your work every single time they've come to Pleasure Beach. So it'd be great to find out a little bit more about some of the stuff that you have done here.
People know Icon, obviously. And there's the Big One soundtrack, Valhalla, the new launch pad, and Evictus sometime next year.
Taking a look at the Hot Ice Show, what kind of stuff do you do for Hot Ice?
I do most of the music. There's two other people who do music as well, but I tend to do the majority of it. So it's the big openings and the big classical pieces, which we kind of redo, kind of choose a classical piece most years to redo in a modern style. And then there's the ballads, the up-tempo numbers and things like that. So it's always very varied, and I never know what Manzi's going to ask for from one year to the next, so it keeps me on my toes.
So what is that process? Obviously, when Manz asks you to do it, but what's the process that goes into it?
Usually we start Christmas, or just after Christmas, and I'll come across back over here, or we'll do it via Skype or whatever. Skype, sound old. Zoom, and she'll have an idea for what the show is going to be this year, and the name of the show, and sometimes the name of the show dictates what she wants musically. So we talk through what we've done before, what we haven't done, and we kind of come up with a variation on the years past, and that can be a long 12-minute piece, or it can be a ballad, or Manz especially loves tango, so there always has to be a tango. So I've got to make a new variation of a tango. But yeah, I particularly enjoy doing the really long pieces because you can tell us a mini story within the story of that year's Hot Ice. So it's always, with trepidation, you kind of think that's a lot of 12-13 minutes is a lot of music, but at the same time you can let it breathe a bit more rather than the shorter 4-minute dance tracks, for want of a better word, which have to be in and going straight away. So you can let it breathe, have fast pieces, slow pieces. And I know Man said in one of these previous videos that I don't take a blind bit of notice of what she says, but I do. I mean, she, as much as I hate to admit it, most of the time she is right about what she wants. And even though I think when I'm in the initial meeting, I'm thinking, okay, this is sounding a bit weird, but yeah, she's always right, disappointingly.
Well, it really does show when you watch Hot Ice, particularly this year, Hot Ice Success. You can see it's a storytelling, not just with the sounds, with the show that's on there, with the lighting. It's everything. It's a roller coaster of the senses.
Oh, it's an amazing show. It really is. It goes along at a hell of a pace, and the poor skaters. It must be a challenge to do that every single night, and indeed matinees. So the music has to have the same pace as the show. But I suppose it does dictate the pace of the show as well. So it has to have the highs and lows. If it went along at 200 beats per minute for 2 hours, A, there would be lots of exhausted skaters, but B, lots of exhausted audience. So you've got to have it's got to flow in a kind of rhythmical way. And like, for example, putting three slow numbers together would grind the show to a halt. but again, three fast numbers would feel exhausting. So yeah, it's a balance.
So how does it differ creating the soundtracks for rides compared to the live events?
There's similar in many ways that it's you're trying to tell a story with music, but the especially the way I treat the rides is you're telling more of a direct story, very much related to what's the visuals or whatever is going on, and it needs to have a central theme that you can keep calling back to. The rides tend to be more of an evolution, so they grow over the course over a much longer time frame, and you can be a bit more experimental or random. The skaters like to be on the time and have hit points and things like that, whereas the doing a score, I can change time signatures and things like that because it's just music. So it frees you up a lot more, and you can tell a slightly more detailed story, I think, with the rides than you can do with doing music for the ice show.
Well, the ride operators very much enjoy listening to the loop of the Big One soundtrack all day, every day. But I still enjoy it when I pop by the ride. Yeah. I do particularly like the Big One soundtrack, actually. It's got a really good kick to it.
I like that one, yeah. We're going completely off subject. I went on Launchpad today.
Okay.
And it's the first time I've heard it in situ. And not bragging, I added to the experience. For the first time, it felt like it was part of the ride, if you get what I mean.
No, I do get what you mean, because I do think music can actually play a big part in the overall experience of going, or when you're queuing up for the ride and the build-up and all of that kind of stuff. I know I'm referencing the Big One again, but when you're referencing the height measures during I really enjoy that part as well, because it referenced back directly to the ride.
Yes.
And I think that's a really cool sort of little detail to put in there. But certainly when you're queuing up for the Big One, the music is part of getting you excited, getting you hyped for the ride. And I think that's really important. Music can, and where you really notice if it's not there.
And I think actually that's, without saying too much about what's happening with Evictus, that's kind of what we've tried to do for the start of all of the marketing efforts we're doing now, involving sounds from the Evictus universe into some of the little teasers we're doing. So it's not just about the sound building up when somebody's in a queue or on a roller coaster, but it's building up even now for the whole campaign.
Yeah, I tried to do that for Icon, and well, more Icon, because and Valhalla actually. The sounds exist in their own Valhalla sound universe or Icon sound universe, and they get used in a kind of, if you had a random sound and you think it just doesn't fit in that world, so you make a sound that does. So there's nothing that you think, oh, that's strange. Yeah. It should all evolve in be the same colour, kind of. If you want to use a different analogy, it's in my head. You know, some people might disagree, but it's what fits in my head, and that's a big space to fill because there's not much else in there.
Brilliant. Maybe can you tell us a little bit about the process for each of the rides? We won't go into all of them, but for the Big One, for example, what process was involved in that?
The unique thing about doing the music for the Big One was it was already there. And it had been there forever, to me, and so it was a weird thing to do. And because I could, it was the morning after opening night or something. We came on park before it opened, and I had a mic and a boom and things like that. And while they were testing the ride, I was just wandering around recording things. So I knew I wanted the lift hill on, because it's kind of its iconic sound. And then right, if you listen to this score, right at the very start, there's kind of a weird, eerie noise. And when I was underneath the lift hill with the microphone, the microphone kept going nearer one of the junction boxes, and it was causing like an electrical interference with the microphone. So while nothing was happening, I was kind of doing this, and that's right at the start. And I also wanted as it comes into the station, the station breaks, and that the siren that goes off. And then while I was doing the ambient recording of that, all the ride ops radios were going off. So they're all in the background as well. So you have that kind of feeling of being in the ride. But I also, when I was doing the actual music for it, I wanted it to sound relentless. So it kind of builds as it's climbing. But once it's got to the top, and then there's that kind of, I always experience like a free fall sensation when you're coming off the first drop. And then to me, it's just the most relentless thing in the world. So that's why the music has this kind of relentlessness to it. Like it's chugging along and it's never going to stop. And so, and because of when it was built, I wanted to give it a kind of 90s feel to it, like the music had always been on the ride. If I did something contemporary or something, it wouldn't fit because the ride is obviously an older ride. So I kind of tried to give it a 90s feel without going too far. So kind of timeless, but at the same time a little salute to when it was built.
When you've done that, you've had the beauty of hindsight to be able to ride on it first and experience it.
Yeah.
But for Icon, you wouldn't have had a clue.
That was the first time I'd ever done a ride score at all. It was, I come here and I get given work to do. So it was the day after Hot Ice one year, a man sidled up to me in hushed tones. We're doing a ride next year, kind of thing. We want you to do the music. And I went, okay, yeah. And I didn't know what ride music was. I had no idea. So I kind of thought about it for a bit. And then she gave me she phoned me up and she gave me like a 10-minute vision of what the ride was going to be to her. And so I was scribbling away. And if you listen to the score, it's a story. It's that story going through. So it's Manzi's story set to audio, basically. And I especially like the ambient version that you hear as you're in the start of the queue line. For some reason, when I was doing all the different mixes, the ambient one, I genuinely quite like this. It's quite cool. And I went on it today, and I was obviously listening, and yeah, it takes you on a journey. There's the ambient, and then there's the build, and you get in the station, and there's the tents, and then as you're coming out, there's a jubilation kind of feeling to it. So, yeah, to me, I feel job done. So that's all I can say. Even now, I listen to it, and I thought, I can't do it. I could not improve on it. So, and that's very rare for me. So,
and it is a brilliant soundtrack, I'm sure you'll agree, Andy.
Oh, I love the soundtrack. I actually listened to it in the car. I think that's a sign of a good soundtrack,
yes,
if you actually do listen to
separately,
something.
Yeah.
They are all available on Spotify and on things like that, so you can do. I'll be honest, I don't listen to it in my car journeys, but I enjoy it when I'm here. So, Andy, let's move over to you a little bit and hear a bit more. I guess we're talking about the different aspects that are coming together when a ride's being built, but at what point does everything come together for you?
Does everything come together for operations? The idea is that operations are involved early, because the earlier you're, which is actually the case with Evictus, because we've actually been working on this project for well over a year now, and what's been good about it is that operations have been right there with engineering. I work very closely with our engineering department, and if operations are involved in that way, which they are, what it means is you can iron out loads of things that otherwise would become apparent once the ride opened if you hadn't gone through that process, you know. And there's loads to think about now. We like to think about the journey. It's interesting you're talking about the journey of the music going through on Icon. We have to think about the journey of the guests to the ride, from arriving outside, what it looks like, what route they're going to go through. Are they going in the regular queue? Are they using Speedy Pass? Are they using Easy Pass? So, you know, what hopefully operationally, you want people to see a bit of the process before they actually sit in the seat on the ride, because it means that when they do, if they've seen it just beforehand, then they know what's going to happen, and it makes loading and unloading quicker. So that, which is sort of a nuanced thing that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but if you do think about those things, it pays off in the end. So with Evictus, we have been doing that, and we've had quite a lot of input into the layout of things like queue lines, where people are going to go, you know, and so that's the sort of flow of people part. And then there's obviously the operational part, which, you know, I have talked about before, but we've been intrinsically working with the manufacturer, and I know now how many staff I need, where they're going to stand, what the process is, what buttons they're going to press, you know, how we're going to, you know, where we're going to position the CCTV, all of those kind of little things come together because the next time operations kind of properly touches the ride is at the point quite late on, when you're getting towards the end of the commissioning process and it's being handed over to us for ride training and preparation and so on. So it has been really good to be involved right along.
And to help with that, have you taken some learnings from Icon, do you think?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've been involved in a couple of new rides and the implementation of those. I mean, yeah, every time you do any kind of large project, you learn absolutely loads, and it's a really interesting in process, and you try and adapt it. The other thing that kind of changes as you go through, as time goes on, is technology, and that's, you know, a lot of what we do now is all done on tablets and so on, which would have been done in a more basic format. So I think the big sort of, certainly over the last 10 years, in the time that I've been doing this here, I've seen that change, you know, the way we log things, the way we train people, the way all of those kind of things. And now there's always an electronic trail going all the way through, which you probably didn't have sort of even like 15 years ago. So that's been an interesting change. I like to say it makes the process easier. Sometimes it does, but there's always that bit at the start whenever there's any new technology involved where you're sort of playing around to try and get it to work and so on.
I think that's exactly the same for us in marketing as well. I mean, we've learned from Icon and from Launchpad. Icon obviously has this great identity. Even just looking at the train, it's unlike any other roller coaster really in the country, isn't it?
The train design is beautiful. I mean, that was a big thing with Icon, was actually the comfort of the seats, and the way the train looked was one of the big deciding factors actually, and why we went with that particular ride. So.
Yeah, I remember one of the early marketing pictures, and it was just like the headlights, it was like a pair of eyes, and it was like, wow, you don't see that very often. It was like almost like a car launch, almost, kind of the intensity of it, looking straight on at the train. It's like, wow, that's there for business. It means business, yeah.
But what's cool is you can kind of see a modern day version of that in Evictus, in some of the graphics and stuff that you're using already for that. Mm. I mean, you must just sort of take that as a impetus or an idea for when you're planning how the soundtrack for the ride is.
Yeah, I'll just use all the offcuts I didn't use on Icon. <and just, laughs> You'll have it next week. It's fine.
No, that is it's a good point though, and I think for us for Icon, I obviously wasn't here when Icon opened, but for us as a collective whole in marketing, we've taken learnings from Icon, even from Launchpad, which although it was just a reimagining, it's had that whole big story, which you've been a massive part of too, Glenn, of telling that story through audio. But the big story behind it, we sent obviously the messages up to space a few weeks ago.
That was really cool. Yeah. Some of those images, which is, it was good that the guests could get involved, and that's what, you know. So it wasn't just marketing being put out. It was stuff that people can actually interact with and so on. I think when it's done like that, it makes it a much sort of stronger piece.
Yeah, and it has to be. It has to be immersive. It has to be more than just. It needs to be a thrilling ride, which it's going to be. But I think it's the story that packages it all up, which is really what people are going to remember. They'll love the ride, but it's the story and the lore and the universe behind it that people...
It's more and more important these days. I mean, when the big one was built, it's just like, it's built, let's open it, off we go.
No, it did. I mean, it was the tallest roller coaster in the world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, but that was it.
There was no background story or anything, but now...
That even with Evictus, you're absolutely right. And there is a lore and there is a backstory. And as marketing people, I presume you'd like... drip feeder where you do drip feed information, but that's what makes it exciting, because you don't want everything all at once. I think people want to find out more as the project goes on and so on.
Definitely, and for us, it's really about having a conversation with our guests, with our audience, instead of just putting everything out there at once, where they'll see it all, be excited for a week, and then it's done. We don't want them just to be observers. We want them to be part of the story, part of the experience. And by piecemealing it just now, people are putting their own bits together, where the story's building and building until we open. And Amanda's wrote a fantastic, obviously we can't talk about it too much just now, but Amanda's wrote a fantastic story about Evictus, and it's our job to tell that story, and which, you're a big part of that.
I'd love her mind for doing things like that. Is like, you read it and you think, It's like a stream of consciousness that comes out of her, and it's for me anyway. It's perfect. The more detail in the story I can get, the more little details I can put in the music, and stay on the same wavelength as the vision. If sometimes you get stuff and it's a 3-line brief, and so you go off in your own happy direction. And then when you deliver it, that's not what they were thinking. So, the more detail, the better. And the one thing she's really, really good at is attention to detail. So, for me, it makes my job so much easier.
Because you have a strict brief to follow.
Oh, yeah, it's just a musical timeline. It's brilliant, yeah.
And when Amanda gives you those stories, how do you translate that emotion to the actual music?
It's very easy, actually. It's... we are on, weirdly, on the kind of same wavelengths. We like the melodramatic, but also kind of hands in the air euphoria at the same time, with lots of bangs. And if it's a Hot Ice song, it has to have a big end, which I always get shouted at for not doing. But it's we are really on the same musical wavelength. So it is. I hate to say it's easy, because when I'm sat in my studio. And you're trying to transition from one bit to the next, and it doesn't. And you're crying, and you've been sat there 4 hours, and you really haven't done as much as you planned to do that day. Then I wouldn't say it's easy, but on the whole, it's an easy way to do it that we're both on the same wavelength. So she knows what she wants. She knows I can do it, and I know what she wants. So we kind of, in a really odd couple way, kind of get each other. So. From that point of view, she's one of the easiest people I work for.
Where does the inspiration come from, though, Fair?
The hardest thing I always say is you have the... Like, Evictus is written in my head. And the hardest thing to do is to get it to trickle down my hand, in my arms and out of my hands. You just... I like to start with the unit, as I said before, the sound universe, and... various sections I'll complete, but I'll know that I have to get to that. So if you equate it to a normal song with an intro, verse, and a chorus, the main hook would be the chorus. Everybody's going to hum, or hopefully hum, like the main theme to Icon. So if you come up with that first, you've got to work out how to get to there, rather than just starting with that. You've got to build, you've got to introduce things and things like that. So it's just plotting it is that you can come up with a melody and you think, yeah, this is a killer melody. This is the melody for this thing. And this is the thing that everybody's going to identify. But getting it to sit right and building right to it and all the accompaniment that go behind it, to me, is the hard bit. The melody or the idea is that, it's weird. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were talking about Icon, and I said, if I did Icon today, it would be completely different. It's just your mood on the day.
It's really interesting though, because it's an emotional
yes.
thing, and I suppose what's What's also interesting about it is when you then, so you've got that part, you involve us as operations, that's very, very, has to be very, very structured by its nature. And then engineering in a similar way has to be very, very formal and exacting and so on. When you mix all of those things together,
yeah,
to get to a final product or experience or whatever, with all those different people, with all those different areas of expertise sort of playing into it, I think that's, you know, from a project point of view, that's what makes it interesting. I mean, even for you guys, for marketing, I mean, what kind of challenges would you find when you're planning something, a new attraction?
I mean, for this in particular, it's talking to all the different audiences we've got. The enthusiasts obviously want to know about how big the ride's going to be. They want to know who's manufacturing the ride. They want to know all of the nitty gritty details. But a family, they just want to know, is it going to be good? Can I bring my family? Is it something that we're going to enjoy when it opens next year? So I think for us, it's the challenge is to tell all the right stories to the right people so that nobody feels left out and everyone feels included, which is kind of what we're doing now by having the teasers. We're teasing more and more of the story, but at the same time, we're not neglecting the actual ride information itself. You'll have seen the video recently where it's been CGI'd into the landscape, and you can see the colossal size that the ride's actually going to be.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
I know it does. I remember when the Icon, there was a computer animation of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm old, you couldn't imagine. I mean, you knew where it was going, but you couldn't imagine how it was going to fit and how it was going to do this and that and go through the big one and things like that. So yeah, imagery and setting the expectation through virtual reality. Yeah, like an animation or whatever. That's all part of the marketing as well, isn't it? It's really important. It gets people excited about, my God, that thing is enormous. It kind of, that won't fit.
When you watch the video that they've made,
yes.
Because it actually swings higher than the big one at that point, where the big one goes past the ride. So,
I'm getting a size comparison live now out the window.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge ride.
Yeah.
I think that's probably all we've got time for today. But what I do just want to touch on that you mentioned there, Andy, that I think is a brilliant point, that actually for every ride at Pleasure Beach, there's so much. Hopefully this has given you a glimpse into some of the things that do happen behind the scene. There's so many different interlinking parts that need to come together to make a ride as successful as it is and as loved as it is by all of the guests that come here, from yourselves, from construction, from you, Glenn, as well. And of course, not forgetting Pleasure Beach Studios. Adam's team do a fantastic job to bring the ride to life once it's actually here, to set the theme, the universe, for the actual ride. And I know that it's going to be a fantastic experience for us and then for the guests that join us as well. So thank you very much for watching. And if you want to stay up to date with all of the Evictus updates, make sure you follow us on our social media and keep checking the website and subscribe to the podcast to stay in the know. We'll see you at Pleasure Beach Resort very soon.